It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer, Ken. Glad you could be here. We check in now on the shortage of CNAs, certified nursing assistants, and the state pipeline program designed to support this workforce in nursing homes. It's the WIS Caregiver Careers Program, connects long-term care facilities in a worker crisis with potential employees, first launched in 2018 to attract and retain nurse aides. And the program expanded again in July with $6 million. Tell us about what you see, 800-642-1234. Kate Battiato is Director of Workforce Development for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association. That's a nonprofit advocating for long-term care providers. Kate, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. I am so excited to be back and share about this enormous need for CNAs in long-term care and the progress we're making at WIS Caregiver Careers to take this problem head on.
Well, tell us. I want to jump in here, but tell us about what this expansion is with this additional $6 million infusion.
So the $6 million is funding 3,000 training slots across the state to provide free CNA training, as well as $500 retention bonuses for anyone who wants to work in a Wisconsin nursing home.
Okay, so it's basically so that you can get more people trained up and, you know, once they've been in the profession, they get a bonus. Is that how those dollars are being put?
That's correct. We're providing those $500 bonuses. We're covering the cost of training, the cost of certification exams. We're starting a mentorship aspect of the program where our existing workforce will also be eligible for bonuses by mentoring our new and upcoming workforce trainees.
What does mentoring entail?
Well, we actually are providing our employers with programming to help them establish this model of a proven model. Established in a long-term care environment where there's a peer-to-peer support model where but within 30 days of the start of training, our WIS caregivers are paired with a seasoned colleague who's really meant to do two things. Be a best friend at work, somebody that they can relate to on a not a supervisory level or a training level, just a peer that they can know and trust. And then also to help them understand and know and be confident that they know how to do their jobs and to provide that support and guidance about how each of those skills that they're certified to do are implemented at that facility.
Will that help retain workers, do you think?
Yes. In our model, when it was first implemented at the facility that it was implemented at, they had a under 50% retention rate, around 47%. Mm. And then after implementing this model, that retention rate went up to the high 80s.
Wow. So that's
quite
a difference.
So we're hoping that we see the same sort of, because support makes so much difference in acclimating to a new job.
Let's take stock for a moment. Since WIS Caregivers launched in 2018, training up, you know, more than 3,500 CNAs, and feel free to update, you know, that number. How many new certified nursing assistants are expected to complete this training this year?
So we're hoping to have, by the end of the funding window, 3,000 people start CNA training. From there, we are expecting, you know, some attrition because not everybody can make it through. But we're looking to have almost 2,000 people make it onto the nurse aide registry. And we're looking at some really great progress so far. I've got some numbers to share if you're ready to jump into that.
Yes, please go ahead.
So just to frame it for your listeners, this is a huge problem in Wisconsin. We've estimated the number of vacancies at over 6,000. And considering that CNAs do 80 to 90% of the patient care in nursing homes, we just can't have nursing homes without CNAs. So what we've done thus far is we have 260 nursing home employers signed up to participate. They're dispersed across the state in small towns, rural areas, cities. We would love to have every nursing home in the state participate. So if any of your listeners are connected with a nursing home in their communities, I encourage them to reach out to see if they're participating or to check our employer map at withcaregiver.com to see if they're signed up. And if they're not, please encourage them to get involved. So onto our numbers, our outreach and our impact across the state. Just under 1,000 people have registered with the program through withcaregiver.com. We think this is great progress. For every person who registers with us on our website, we connect them with all participating employers within a 50-mile radius of the zip code they provide. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we're alerting the employers within that radius to say, hey, this person in your area is interested in working and training to become a CNA. So what this registration statistic is really means and why it's so meaningful is that it represents about 1,000 people starting the career journey to become a CNA and 1,000 hot leads that we are giving to our nursing home employers who are in such need of recruiting support. Training and certification.
I'm just going to jump in and reintroduce you as we get an update on the WIS Caregiver Careers Program and looking at the workforce of certified nursing assistants. Kate Battiato is Director of Workforce Development for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association. You can join in on what you see in your workforce at your clinic, 800-642-1234. Kate, I'm wondering, you know, a workforce development program can't prop up an industry forever, or, you know, maybe it can, but what must change for the WIS Caregiver Careers Program to not be needed?
Great question. So as I was alluding to before, our nursing homes need more support when it comes to recruiting resources and techniques, best practices. So part of what WIS Caregiver Careers is trying to do is share and encourage those best practices across long-term care. One of the strategies that we're implementing to try to make WIS Caregiver Careers a lasting impact on the long-term care community is providing more sophisticated recruiting tools to nursing homes. So like I mentioned, we've got the system that provides the hot leads. In addition, we're providing a social media and advertising toolkit to our employers that they can customize and implement in their communities. Additionally, like I mentioned, we're providing that training for mentorship and providing this low risk environment for them to try it out and see how it does benefit their recruitment and retention efforts. Long-term, though, we truly do need better funding for nursing homes. If that funding doesn't come through, we're going to continue to face this challenge long-term.
What can be done about the low wage issue of this work, that is life-sustaining for many people in long-term care facilities when you see the hourly wage of a nursing assistant at about $17 an hour?
It really boils down to Medicaid reimbursement rates. That's set at the state level, it's set at the federal level. All policymakers really can get involved in improving the Medicaid reimbursement rates, not only for our workforce, but for the people that they care for.
But the healthcare industry is worth well over $800 billion in our country. Why can't these employers invest in their workforce and pay to recruit and train and pay their workers a livable wage with a path for career advancement?
The amount that the government, so really healthcare in large part is funded through the government. And the amount that the government is providing is astonishingly low. Like for training, for example, the average cost of training across the state is around $550. The maximum amount that Medicaid will reimburse for training is $225. And that's if you have 90% to 100% Medicaid population in your facility. So it's just, you know, the math doesn't add up. You can't, create these extra incentives without extra support. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we are so happy with Governor Evers' decision to invest this $6 million. It really is demonstrating that the government is understanding that we do need more support in order to be successful long term.
Kate Battiato with us, Workforce Development Director for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association, working on the WISC Caregiver Careers Program and this outsized need for certified nursing assistants in Wisconsin and this pipeline approach. Join in on CNA training, the pay, the future of the workforce, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Health Department says the WISC Caregiver Careers Program has trained more than 3,500 new CNAs for employment since launching in 2018. And the worker crunch, it was dire at the start of this year when Governor Tony Evers had mobilized the National Guard, asking dozens of troops to become certified nursing aides as the Omicron variant surged and healthcare staffing shortages intensified. Join in on where you're at now with CNA staffing. Maybe you've been a CNA before, or perhaps training for one in the future. 800-642-1234. Kate Battiato is Workforce Development Director for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association and stays with us. Kate, you are working on this project with Herzing University to expand CNAs. Can you explain this pilot project?
Yeah, so one of the great things about becoming a CNA, in addition to making a difference in people's lives and job flexibility and job security, all these great reasons to become a CNA, the career ladder up from CNA is a great opportunity. And so what the long-term care community wants is to make that CNA career ladder accessible to their workforce. So because we need nursing support at every level, from CNA all the way up to advanced practice nurses and nurse educators. And we want to see WISC Caregiver Careers support these efforts. So to do so, we've partnered with Herzing University and two different employers to pilot WISC Caregiver Careers CNA to medication aid. We received two different Wisconsin Fast Forward grants from the State Department of Workforce Development. And just as background, medication aides are advanced practice CNAs who are trained and certified to administer medication at Wisconsin nursing homes. So this small pilot follows the same employment-first model as our CNA program. It starts with a job at one of our participating employers, and it features paid tuition, fees, and books for the first 12 credits of Herzing University's LPN program. Upon completion, the trainee can sit for the medication aid certification exam, and once they pass, they earn a $2 pay raise. So we're building the career ladder rung by rung, and this is the first step. But the bottom line is that the long-term community wants to be a part of the solution to this workforce crisis that we're facing, and we're seeking out innovative solutions and want to be proactive in showing our communities the great opportunities that our sector provides on so many levels, from progressive wage scales, job flexibility and security, and most importantly, the opportunity to make a real difference in people's lives.
Okay, and LPNs are licensed practical nurses. Is that right? And then the next step would be an RN, registered nurse?
Correct, yeah. So after this pilot, or after completing the training and becoming a medication aide, you'd be about one-third of the way towards that LPN degree. Medication aides would be earning like between like the low 30s and or high 30s and low 40s. And the time to become a medication aide is about 6 to 12 months of training and a year of experience. Then with LPNs, you can become an LPN with an additional 8 to 12 months of training, and the earning potential there is around, on average, $48,000 in Wisconsin.
Per year, annually, is the salary
Correct.
About. Okay. And, you know, as you work with these private organizations and universities, what are they telling you as they try to attract and retain students? What do you hear out there about the workforce challenges that they see from their perspective?
Well, I know that they want to do more outreach in the community and connect with students that have traditionally not had access to higher education. Mm-hmm. That's why they were so interested in partnering with us and providing this, even going after this grant money to provide this no debt option to bring people who might otherwise not have access to higher education into the fold and providing that debt-free option to pursue higher education. So yeah, I think that they do understand that they want to cast a wide net, a wider net, and bring in, you know, first-generation college students and other underserved communities.
As we talk about that, something personal for me is when my mom lived in a nursing home, her CNAs and her, you know, other caregivers, they were often relatively new to the U.S. What is the role of immigrant labor in this profession?
Oh, immigrant labor provides such a great opportunity not only to bring in new Americans, but to support our need, our staffing need. I know that there's been a lot of efforts at the federal level to improve the ability to offer visas in healthcare, and it's something that definitely needs more support at the federal level. It can be a real challenge bringing people in.
We're talking with Kate Battiato about the workforce challenges and the program to attract and retain more certified nursing assistants in Wisconsin and to fill the schedules of long-term care facilities that have really worked under a worker crunch in this area. You can join in at what you see in your nursing home, 800-642-1234. Kate, earlier this year when the governor called up the National Guard to fill in with the Omicron surge and that was really decimating staffing levels, what was your reaction from the perspective of running this WIS Caregiver Careers program?
Oh, I was so, so thankful and grateful that he made that decision. I think that that situation really demonstrates how this workforce crisis can affect everyone. If we don't have the workforce infrastructure in long-term care, hospitals can't discharge. And so the fact that he, you know, stepped up and brought in those National Guard service members and those National Guard service members were there to support us made such a huge difference, not only in the long-term care setting, but also in the hospital setting.
Hmm. How could state lawmakers help bolster the state's healthcare workforce and emergency preparedness? What do you want to tell lawmakers?
Well, first off, the Medicaid rates, you know, really it ties back to Medicaid rates, but also supporting different innovative solutions to employer-led strategy. So WIS Caregiver Careers, it's an employer-led training initiative. There are other employer-led opportunities for support. Like I know there are grants out of the Department of Children and Families for employer-led childcare. Mm-hmm. We could also use support in transportation, especially in our rural areas. If there isn't a bus service, it's very hard for people to get to work at a 24/7 type business, which is what healthcare is. So all of those pieces, that's why workforce development policy is so interesting and also so important. It's where all these other policy areas really hit the road, rubber meets the road between training, childcare, healthcare, even criminal law. Everything really comes together with the workforce. And if any of those are out of place, the workforce isn't there.
We see some nurses preparing to strike as they attempt to organize and have their union recognized. Do CNAs and health aides need a voice? Who represents their interests and gives them that leverage in the workforce with their employers?
I do understand that there are unions that do represent CNAs across the state. I haven't personally been real involved with them, but I know that it's an important part, and it's and that it is out there. Just after Labor Day, it's important to continue to think about that stuff.
Before we have to let you go, what does success look like for the WIS Caregiver Careers Program? What do you envision?
Well, I would love to, first off, have every single nursing home in the state participate so that they can really get this experience of what employer-led training really is all about. Second, I would love to fill every single slot that we have funding for. We have 3,000 training slots available, so I'd like to use all of those slots. Ideally, each person who starts the training will go all the way through certification and retention. And just having more knowledge out there in the public of what a CNA career is all about. It's not just a paycheck. It's, again, making that difference in people's lives, having a meaningful career with growth potential. Because I really think there is a lot of misunderstandings out there about what a CNA career is really like. So that would be a huge success for me as well in the program.
Kate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Kate Battiato is Director of Workforce Development for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association. Up ahead, we talk with two Menominee Nation educators about an immersive Menominee language charter school that's opened. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore now a Menominee Nation language immersion charter school. It's open in Kashina on the Menominee Tribes Reservation. It's called Kakinawapatak Charter School. And the word referencing the traditional way members of the Menominee Tribe learned language and skills through observation. Join in on Indigenous languages, how to save them, fluency for future generations, 800-642-1234. Kakakachawan Kara Bisa is a Menominee language immersion instructor with the Menominee Indian Tribe of Wisconsin. Kara, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Posomi.
Hello, and Waknawe Ben Greeno is Menominee Language and Culture Coordinator with the Menominee Indian School District. Ben, welcome to you.
Also.
So, Ben, let's start with you. The Menominee School District has been teaching children in daycare and Head Start settings the Menominee language. What is the next step here with the charter school?
Well, we're continuing their education process. A lot of our kids have been immersed in the language since birth. So we're trying to move along with their immersion experience and their language learning. And so we're starting off this year with a pre-K and K, two classrooms. And each year for the next few years, we're going to be adding on another classroom, another grade level.
This is such a momentous thing for you because you've been working so hard to get it off the ground. What does it feel like in these first few days that this charter school is opened?
Well, you know, I think personally, like I don't know how to prepare for this. You know, I feel like I'm prepared, but coming back to a traditional idea of what Menominee education is, it's something that hasn't been done since, you know, probably before the boarding school. So figuring out how do our students immerse themselves in the language, in the forest classroom, in our regular indoor classrooms. I think that's something that's really exciting, but something that's also very scary.
And Kara, let's turn to you. With school starting, you're one of the teachers. Can you tell us what you've experienced so far?
So far, it's been quite a learning experience. It's only been a few days, but it's my first time working with children who haven't been with the immersion program since birth. But I feel a lot of hope coming into our classroom, and I can already see so much growth.
Young children, they're, you know, said to absorb language, a second language, more easily than adults. How important is it, Kara, to immerse the students early in that pre-K and kindergarten years?
Well, coming into this, the idea of teaching only in Menominee to children who haven't been exposed to much of it, or as much as the other kids, was kind of a daunting or like a really intimidating task to come into. But Since beginning teaching for a program, I see firsthand daily how naturally it all comes to them. And we can't forget that language is an integral part of who they are as Menominee children, and that alone sets them up for success. So it's important that we keep fostering that for them to help them build that sense of identity in the classroom and outside of the classroom.
Language is integral to who they are. And I'm wondering, Ben, how endangered is the Menominee language?
Well, when the immersion program first started, there were very few, if any, children under five who were being raised in the language. And now we have a population here at this school of 33 students that'll be totally immersed in our language and in our daycare and Head Start. I'm not sure how many we have now, but maybe Kara would be able to tell you like what the amount of students that are in there and.
Kara, how do you see that in terms of the number of children that you're trying to really, just engross in the Menominee language so that more people can speak it?
With the number of children?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just like I said before, I feel like it's a little bit of an intimidating task at first. Mm-hmm. You kind of wonder how you're going to do it and how it's all going to work, but it falls together a lot more naturally than you would expect it to, which is great. We have kids who will be coming here through the daycare and through the language nest. I think, Watanwe, to answer part of your question too, we have a baby room up to, I think, a year and a half at the early Head Start, a two-year-old room and a three-year-old room. I'm not sure how many kids are in mm-hmm. each room, but hopefully those kids will come through Kakena Wapatat when they're able to, when they hit the 4K age as well.
What is the language nest?
That is what originally started in the daycare, I believe, in 2017. That was in the daycare setting. And just recently, they've been moving over to our tribal Head Start building to continue on with immersion for the birth to three age.
And with immersion in this charter school setting, is there instruction dual language? Is there some English mixed into instruction, or is it purely in the Menominee language?
Right now, everything that we're doing is purely in Menominee language.
Oh, wow, that's so incredible. How does that feel for you? I mean, as a teacher, that too must be a challenge.
Yeah, it's completely different from everything that I feel like I learned when I was getting my higher education. Mm. It's just something completely different and new, and every day is different, and we just kind of take it day by day and do our best.
I'm going to reintroduce you. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Menominee Nation's Kakena Wapatak Charter School. It opened in recent days. Ben Greenough here and Kara Bisa, educators at the school. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on passing on Indigenous languages and how to prevent language loss in your community, 800-642-1234. Ben, what is the school's instructional model? What are you modeling it after?
Well, we really looked at many different kinds of education models, methodologies. One thing that really caught on early on was the Montessori model, looking at kind of following what the child's needs and wishes are growing up. I think that really models a similar education track as what a traditional Menominee education model would be. We've also looked at Waldorf and Forest Kindergartens and as many different kinds of models that seem like they would fit well with our immersion needs.
And you mentioned a forest earlier. What does the natural world have to do with how you're teaching the children?
Oh, man. Well, our language has a is very bird-based. And many of the things that happen in the forest, the things that we're doing, are really directly related to, we have the vocabulary for that. And I know Kara would be able to speak a little bit more about that, because she's out there doing it and using the language. So hopefully Kara would be able to say something about that too.
Yeah, go ahead about the language and making sure that you have to find words for all these concepts. And maybe, I'm wondering, can you explain how the Menominee language differs from English or other European languages, Kara?
Beginning my language journey, I started as an adult a few years ago. And in the beginning, it was a constant effort to unlearn a lot of the English rules, practices, ideals. Things are so different in Menominee language, the way you order your sentences, what's considered animate and inanimate, living and non-living, is different in Menominee than it is in English, so you talk about things a different way. But what I'm finding so far is that children don't seem to have this issue, at least not at this age anyway, because they're seeing the world through new eyes and they have an opportunity to see the world and learn through their own unique Menominee perspectives while we're outside in the forest.
Are there any words or concepts that are difficult to translate for you into Menominee?
I think the most difficult part is explaining how some of it is different. Like, for example, in English, a rock would be considered non-living, but in Menominee, it's considered living. So trying to teach the children to care for these different objects in a different way is something new that we're working on.
Hmm. Let's bring on a call. Joe is joining us from Star Lake. Joe, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Well, I wanted to talk about radio drama, radio plays. By the way, I wanted to mention this idea of language that looks at what we think of as inanimate, as living things, is very important, but I just wanted to get that out of the way. My wife and I, starting in the 1990s, started doing extensive work with radio drama in schools, and often half the kids in the class wouldn't have spoken. It was mostly in English, but would be Hmong speakers or Spanish speakers. We found it was this tremendous motivation for any language because the kids would record. There'd be some sound effects, which they loved, to make the thunder sheet or the coconuts or whatever. We'd write in these sound effects. And then we'd record, which you can do now very easily, the children recording their play.
Hmm.
And then they had something to take home, and their aunts and their grandmother, could listen to it. And you're really motivating someone to have a real world use of the language that they're learning, and it's fun, and they do it collectively. It's just, there's so many hidden things, and you don't cast by appearance, and at the end of the play they say their names, but they don't say they played this character, because somebody played the footstep of the character, so you get away from the whole star system of theatrics, which can be kind of destructive. It's really a gem of a way to teach language.
Joe, thank you for that. And Ben, I'm wondering, are there tools like perhaps dramas or other ways to be able to convey the language?
Oh yeah, we've been really really interested in some of the things that are coming out of, like for instance the new Predator movie Prey has been done in done in the Comanche language, looking at something like Moana in the Maori language, or even Star Wars in totally in Navajo. And they go through and I've watched these and they do all the sound effects and they do everything that would make the even the mouths be similar, the mouthing of the words similar to what the language is. It's really amazing, and I love that idea of a radio drama. I used to listen to the old radio dramas that came out of England, I think, with mm-hmm. The Hobbit and even the Star Wars radio dramas that NPR put out, I think. And I love that idea, and I think there's definitely potential with our storytelling tradition to pursue something similar to that.
Along those lines, I wonder, Ben, is there technology or software? And Kara, you know, jump in here, that could help in learning indigenous languages or endangered languages like the Menominee language? Or is this really all about elders to do this work of passing on language?
You know, we've done a lot of things with like software and those things. It seems like they get tremendous amount of attention right away,
mm-hmm.
and then it dies off really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you put a lot of money into like something with software, and people use it for a little while, and then something else comes along. So I think what we're doing here is really trying to take it back a few steps to our original like oral tradition.
We're talking with Waknawe Ben Greeno, Menominee Language and Culture Coordinator for the Menominee Indian School District. Kakakachewan Karabisa is a Menominee Indian Tribe's language immersion instructor as we look at the launch of a language immersion charter school based on Menominee values and, of course, the language. Join in on the school, How to Save Indigenous Languages, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent as we explore a new charter school that will help protect and preserve the language of the Menominee people and its values, Kakina Wapatak Charter School. It's open for pre-K and kindergarten. This is dozens of Native American languages have gone extinct. More are endangered. Join in 800-642-1234. We have Ben Greeno, who is Menominee Language and Culture Coordinator for the Menominee Indian School District, and Karabisa, Menominee Indian Tribe's Language Immersion Instructor. They stay with us. We heard from Kate in Sheboygan, called in and couldn't stay with us, but Kate is a representative of the Menominee Tribe and wanted to congratulate you both on opening the school. Kate said that the Menominee culture and language means that we will survive, and it is important for the 7 generations to come, Kate said. Kara, how do you feel about those words?
Well, I just want to say wawen and for the congratulations. And I know all of us here at Kakena Wapatet totally agree with everything she's saying. The whole reason we're doing what we're doing is for everybody that's going to come after us. And our hope is with this school, the children we're teaching are going to carry on these language efforts as well while they grow, and they can keep building on everything that's been started for Kakena Wapatet.
Ben, what does society gain by having children learn the Menominee language?
Oh, you get to see a completely different worldview. Our kids are going to be seeing the world through our language, and that's really a beautiful thing. They're going to see, they're going to have an understanding of what it means to be Menominee, living in Wisconsin, our homelands. It'll be a totally different view than I have, than Kara probably has, and that's really exciting, and there's the potential and the hope that's behind all the things that we're doing. It's really a beautiful thing to be a part of, and a beautiful legacy to pass on, like Kara was saying.
Let's bring in another caller. Rit is with us from Madison. And Rit, you teach French, is that right?
That's right.
What would you like to bring to the conversation?
Well, I teach at UW-Madison, and in teaching French, I have discovered that Quebec is an area of my expertise, and I teach a French class in French to American students primarily. And there's been a wave of Indigenous writers in Quebec that have become noticeable in Quebec that are publishing in French, which is their language, sort of like native writers in the U.S. writing in English. And so that has become easier and easier to teach as part of American students learning French and learning about Quebec, because they're learning about Indigenous writers who write in French but who include Innu language, for example, in their work and inside the text of their stories and so on. So I see that coming. I'd love to see that start to emerge in the upper Midwest in the U.S. too also. And I'm wondering if, like, how we, those of us who teach, like, other world languages like French or German or Spanish or Russian or something like that, how we can help regionally or in the state here in your efforts. I mean, I'm thinking of WAFLT, which is the Wisconsin Association for Language Teachers. It meets once a year in Appleton. Most states have something like that. And ESL teachers and French teachers and Spanish teachers all gather and share ideas about pedagogy and about, you know, promotion and outreach to stakeholders and all that kind of stuff. Are you part of that community? Could you be more? Is there a way we could join you in somehow and all kind of to promote teaching Indigenous language and immersion in Wisconsin?
Rit, thank you for that. Kara, you first.
Well, for us, you know, everything with teaching and immersion is still pretty fairly new to me. I've been with the immersion program since 2020, so I'm still learning a lot about the connections we have and the different help that we can receive. So this is a great question for me to learn about, too. But we would love to know more about the different pedagogies and different strategies and things you're implementing that we can take and sort of make Menominee and see what we can use with our children.
Ben, what would you like to say there?
I totally agree. I think that the more conversations we have and the more understanding we have of other best practices in the field, no matter if it's French or Russian or German or Spanish, we all are working kind of towards the same thing, you know, and I think that that there's a lot of sharing that needs to happen both ways. So
let's go to Dustin now in Eau Claire. Dustin, hi.
Hey, how's it going today?
Good. What would you like to add?
Well, I just wanted to comment on the worldview aspect of it. First, I think this is a really impressive model because you're leading from the front with children and you're teaching them. And I think that that's going to bring a lot of adults back into the culture as well in learning with them. And then in addition to that, like, we talk a lot about, you know, you just said it, Spanish, French, all of these international languages. And I think that Native Americans get overlooked as to what they've contributed to society and how we've shaped things. So I think this is a really exciting opportunity for everyone, and I'm glad that this is part of our community.
Dustin, thank you. Ben, in our final moments together, what would you like to add?
I agree, and I think that that Dustin, I think that we all need to come together and share these models and share the our successes, our failures, and how we. How resilient our language is and how powerful it is once we start using it and understanding the world around us.
Well, Ben and Kara, thank you so much for joining us and all the best wishes on the charter school.
Waiwanin.
Waiwanin.
Ben Greeno, Menominee Language and Culture Coordinator for the Menominee Indian School District, and Kara Bisa, Menominee Indian Tribes Language Immersion Instructor. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.